ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Ah. Counting down the days till the big break you look forward to all year. But there's something different in the air this summer. And no, it's not just the smell of sunscreen. More of us are saving up our leave, and this is how much.
A shocking amount, Lisa. 160 million days of annual leave.
Wow, that is a lot. Have you been hoarding your leave for a rainy day? Did you know that in some countries, this isn't even an option?
Your leave allocation is provided on the 1st of January, and it's not earned or accrued like we receive it here in Australia. So it very much runs out come the end of December. It's very much a use it or lose it approach.
But you might feel like you can't take leave even when you'd really like to.
No matter how hard the organisation tries, they can't backfill. Workloads automatically go up. And of course, that is adding to employees saying that I can't take leave because I've got too much work to do.
Hello, I'm Lisa Leong. And for This Working Life, does the way we use our leave need a refresh? Let's explore how they do it in some other parts of the world, shall we?
My name's Madeline Dow. I'm an adjunct professor at University of South Australia, and I'm also a management or workplace consultant.
And can you tell us a bit about your work background, Maddie?
I started out in HR in Canberra, actually, Department of Workplace Relations, as it's now called. I was there for a couple of years before moving to London. And since then, I've worked in the UK, the US, and now back in Australia since COVID. And in those last 12 years, I've mostly been in various forms of management and workplace consulting.
Now, we want to mine your experience today. So, given that you've spent quite a bit of time working in other parts of the world, I want to ask you what you've observed about leave-taking behaviour in those countries. So, let's start with the UK.
For starters, in the UK, you generally get more across the board than what we see here in Australia. So 25, 28 or 30 days plus public, or as they call them, bank holidays, is pretty normal. The main difference, though, is that your leave allocation is provided on the 1st of January, and it's not earned or accrued like we receive it here in Australia. So it very much runs out come the end of December. It's very much a use it or lose it approach. So it's not uncommon. I remember sending reminders to my direct reports in, say, October, asking people to, you know, schedule their leave before the end of the year or else they would be losing it. So consequently, that really changes a little bit around how people take their leave. Most people are taking sort of 5 or 6 weeks in the UK and very much the same in places like France and various parts of Scandinavia as well. So very much the norm in Europe. As we know, it's a bit different here in Australia. We do accrue, and so therefore hoarding or saving, I should say, is a bit more of a thing. It's, you know, save it for a rainy day mentality. So there is quite a few cultural differences around the normalisation of taking it. It's very common, I found, for Brits to perhaps just spend a week pottering in their garden in November to use up the last remainder of their annual allocation.
Annual leave entitlements are even longer in France, where you can have up to 30 days. And the culture of leave across Europe is different too.
I remember working on projects in Switzerland and scheduling meetings in for August and being looked at by my project manager with a funny look. She said, "No, we don't do August. We're at the beach." So very, very different sort of structures. And a lot of that's down to, you know, the hemispheres and how that falls with their summer being in the middle of the year.
Okay, so you also worked in the US. So tell us about the leave entitlements there and the culture of taking leave there.
Americans, we know, statistically take quite less leave than most other countries. That's a fact and well-researched. Interestingly, there is no federal law which requires employers to provide what they call paid time off, the same as our annual leave. We also know that parental leave and those sorts of leave types are really limited compared to what we enjoy here in Australia or the UK. US PTO or annual leave is really provided at discretion, and it's mostly not accrued, which is really interesting. There are some exceptions. For example, California in the last couple of years have introduced legislation around enforcing accruals. Although interestingly, in California, there's no legal minimum amount. So if you do get some, you must be allowed to accrue it, but there's no minimum that you have to receive. So a bit of an interesting one there. The other interesting thing about the USA is that often this PTO balance, as they will call it, is wrapped up with personal and sick leave. So they might say you get 10 or 15 days, but actually, it's far less than that because people will save it for in case I become sick or there's a family emergency. Rather, we know here in Australia we have a separate bucket for this, so it doesn't really impact our vacation time, if I'm going to use an American word, in terms of, you know, really switching off and the benefits that come from taking breaks. A couple of other things that are interesting about the US. increasingly, particularly in the tech industry, there's a lot of noise around unlimited leave balances, but we know the research doesn't necessarily show that that equals a high rate of taking leave. In actual fact, people generally take less. They model off what their team members are doing. But by far the most interesting fact in the US, and I think a driver behind a lot of this, is that most employment there is at will. So you can be terminated at any time for any reason with no notice. So there is a more genuine fear of a shock job loss. Here in Australia, we have the protections of the Fair Work Act, and similarly in the UK, we've got decades, centuries of unionisation movements, and we have a lot more protections around that sort of instant dismissal. So there is definitely a higher fear over job security and your career taking a hit, not being perceived as loyal, being overlooked for promotions. That is a real genuine consideration for a lot of US workers. And one last thing I might mention is health cover. So that's very expensive and very crucial in the US, and it usually also covers your family if you have one. So losing your job means your family's no longer covered. So it's sort of, there's all these layers that build up behind this, whether or not it's fear or just conservativeness around constantly proving yourself as a loyal employee.
And Maddie, in fact, you asked to take leave to come back to Australia when you were working in New York City. Tell us what happened.
Yeah. I requested 1 week of leave. It was actually to fly back to Australia to attend a friend's wedding, and it was going to be the quickest trip ever, there and back in a week. I was 5 months into my role there in the US, and I was pulled aside by a very kind colleague who I'm still very good friends with to this day. She really was trying to have my back, and she asked if I'd thought through the request, as I really would be the first one in that 5 month period to take leave within our team. She was inferring that I would be seen as the least loyal or least devoted if there was, you know, cuts to come. I potentially could be at the top of that invisible list. And she really meant it in a helpful manner, but it was such an interesting conversation to me and really opened my eyes as to the sort of underlying culture and observations that team members will make there in terms of really job security when it comes down to it.
So interesting. And so let's reflect then on Australia. So why do you think leave balances are so high then in Australia?
Well, in short, because they can accumulate and accrue. So that's the main factor. In Europe, in the UK, you generally don't have that. We also do have long service leave, which is wonderful. Although I must note that, you know, as tenures become shorter and shorter across the world, I think we're down to 3.3 years in Australia. And there's not that many people that generally get to a point of accruing it here in Australia. But I think it's also a factor because people are used to accruing and building leave. So they sort of see it as a balance to call upon, a bit of a rainy day mentality. We don't know, you know, when you need it or what it might be used for. And obviously people have, you know, we're a country of travellers domestically and internationally. So people are sort of, oh, in a few years, I've got this dream trip planned. So there's definitely that element that's cultural, but it really comes down to the fact that we can accrue and accumulate. Whereas, you know, in the UK and Europe, that's not the case. And gosh, in the US, PTO, it's not even an accrued benefit for most states, nor is it necessarily a legal part of your employment. So very different.
Even though we have more entitlements and protections than our friends in the US, job security is affecting leave balances in Australia too.
HR software company Elmo surveyed more than 1,000 Australian workers and found that employees have 160 million days of annual leave banked. So more than one in five Australians as well have accrued more than 4 weeks of annual leave.
That's a lot of annual leave sitting on the books.
I am Dr. Libby Sander, Assistant Professor of Organisational Behaviour from Bond University.
What's causing this hoarding?
A few things, actually, which is really interesting. One is that people are worried financially. So a lot of people are using this and also their long service leave as a kind of financial buffer, thinking, oh, if I get laid off, I've got this nice little buffer here until I find a new job. But a big reason as well is because there are still a lot of staff shortages in many roles since the pandemic. We've got increased workloads. And so people feel bad about taking significant periods of leave because there's no one to do their job. So they're kind of going to dump it all on their colleagues. And in some cultures, there is this presenteeism, hustle. You won't get promoted if you go on leave. It means you're a slacker. So there's a bit of that as well.
And Libby, we know that it's harder to take leave when your boss or your leaders or the organisation isn't really supporting it in the culture. So why is it bad for business when organisations have a lot of accumulated leave on the books?
So a couple of factors. Organisations don't like it because it is accrued as a liability on the balance sheet. So that's one big reason. And you get paid at the rate you're currently being paid when you take leave, not at the rate when you accumulated that leave. And a study showed really interestingly that year-end performance for the organisation rose by 8% for every extra 10 hours of annual leave that an employee took. So it's actually this false idea that productivity will continue to rise indefinitely. It kind of goes the other way. It gets plateaus and then it decreases very rapidly. So it really helps everybody for people to take leave.
And what do we know about leave hoarding with personal and long service leave?
I think people are also hoarding their long service leave. I've spoken to a number of people in research and colleagues over the last year who are worried about, one, what would happen to me in terms of my career if I just take these 12 weeks off? But secondly, I'd like to have that financial buffer in case, you know, I lose my job or redundancies or whatever might happen.
Have you heard about the issue of not logging sick leave and just kind of working around being sick, you know, particularly if you're hybrid or flexible working?
Definitely. Now that we are hybrid, I think people can be sicker than they might be when they go to the office, or not wanting to make other people sick. If you're sitting at home, you think, well, it's fine. If I'm not feeling the best, I'm not going to make my colleagues sick. And reluctant to take leave. Of course, we can't take our sick leave like we can our annual leave entitlement when we leave a job. But again, it's still a buffer. I heard of someone the other day who had 27 weeks of annual leave, and I think about 3 years of sick leave accrued. They'd been there obviously for a long time.
Now, one possible contributing factor to this mountain of unused leave is the difficulty with backfill. Sarah McCann-Bartlett is the CEO of the Australian HR Institute.
We have a survey called the Australian Quarterly Work Outlook, which looks at labour market trends every quarter. And what we're finding from that is that it's really hard to find people, whether it's short-term or long-term. So that backfilling itself is quite difficult. And we think that that is one of the drivers of high workload as well. We've had very low unemployment. In fact, we're almost historically low unemployment in Australia. We've seen workplaces with very high turnover. And we've also seen what we call a high level of employment difficulty or recruitment difficulty, where employers are telling us it's very, very difficult to recruit people for vacancies. And of course, the flow-on effect to that is for existing employees, when some of their colleagues leave the organisation, and no matter how hard the organisation tries, they can't backfill, workloads automatically go up. And of course, that is adding to employees saying that I can't take leave because I've got too much work to do.
So overwork and the job market may be driving this accumulation of leave as well. Sarah McCann-Bartlett says there's also a tension for employers between hiring intentions and the changing nature of work.
So employers have told us, and this has been consistent over the last 18 months, that their recruitment intentions are really high. They have vacant positions that they're trying to fill, and they're actively trying to fill those. They're also doing some restructuring. So some jobs are changing, potentially because of AI and advances in technology. So that might mean while the number of roles is the same, they might be needing people with different kinds of skills. And that has led to, over the last 12 months, a bit of an increase in what we call redundancy intentions. But interestingly, redundancy intentions in the December quarter were about the same as they were in the quarter before, the 3 months ending September. So we've got about a quarter of employers, 25% of employers, saying we're planning to make some redundancies this quarter.
So if that's the case and you've picked that vibe up at your workplace, no wonder you think banking your leave is a good idea. But you might want to be careful with that. Here's Dr. Libby Sander again.
Well, it doesn't do great things for our physical and mental health. So it reduces our motivation and it really increases our risk of burnout. And when we're tending towards those directions, we're going to be less satisfied in our jobs, we're going to have higher absenteeism and we're going to have lower productivity. So when we take leave, we're in a better mood and we're less depressed, which is probably not surprising, but we sort of forget about this.
We've done an episode called The Great November Disease. Basically, you're sort of just about to keel over and you're really pushing for the end of the year. And that sounds like this is a symptom of this accumulating leave thing. So what would you say to people about trying not to get to this point?
Taking regular breaks really has a huge impact. So if you think, I don't want to burden my colleagues, I can't afford to go away, just take a few days, you know, maybe once a quarter. Those short breaks do have a big benefit as well. However, having those longer breaks really is important. And I'm sure everyone listening can think of a time when they went on holidays for more than a week and it really took that 10 days to 2 weeks until you think, I'm just winding down now. I'm not feeling that compulsion to check my emails, to worry about what's happening, and I could really switch off. So we really do need to take longer breaks in order to do that and switch off. Take your email app off your phone. Don't check. Put an out of office notice. I saw a brilliant one recently where someone went on long service leave and said, I'm on long service leave. I'm not going to check 800 emails when I come back. So if it's important, send it to me then. Otherwise, I'm just going to delete them all.
So how might we manage our leave better?
So the first thing is, personally, as employees and individuals, valuing it, understanding that you're going to be performing more poorly at work, you're going to be jeopardizing your mental and physical health if you don't take leave. And from an employer's perspective, we need to have a really supportive work culture. So we need to prioritize that well-being is really important in the company, regular breaks are important, and senior managers need to model this themselves. They need to take leave. They need to not check in and be emailing people and running meetings while they're on leave as well. Because of course, we're going to model that behavior from our leaders. So making sure that those kind of boundaries and guidelines are in place. And some organizations offer incentives like bonuses to actually encourage employees to take leave if they're not. And I think education as well. A lot of employees, especially younger employees, aren't aware that not taking holidays will lead to an increased risk of disengagement and burnout.
And so is the tip really just to take the time to book in your leave and maybe even at the start of the year?
Definitely. Plan your holidays. Plan, and it's hard to do in many jobs. We don't know what projects are coming up and what's happening. People might leave and we get all of this extra work, but at least have a plan. What would I like to do? What would that look like during the year with other commitments you might have outside of work? And have a plan that you can book in with your employer, because if we have no plan, it's much harder then to take leave than if we've got an idea of what we'd like to do.
Are you getting in the mood for a summer break? Or would you rather work through and save your leave for mid-year? Maybe you don't have a choice about that. Enter the summer shutdown.
Yes. Well, some employees love them because we think, well, you can go and leave, nothing's happening in the company and I can just switch off and not worry about it. But many employees don't like it if they perhaps don't have children or they don't like to travel at that time of year because it's so busy and expensive. They might feel resentful about having a forced shutdown over that period. So it's a little bit tricky. A lot of employers will give people extra time over that time, maybe two or three extra days, so that it doesn't eat into your annual leave accrual. So it's a good thing, but some people don't like it.
Returned expat and HR consultant Madeline Dow says the timing of our summer shutdown might be affecting our stamina throughout the rest of the year.
When we start out with 4 weeks of leave, which is generally pretty normal in Australia, it does really cut a lot of people down to, say, 12 and 13, which, you know, doesn't leave much scope for other breaks throughout the year. So I think that does contribute to a little bit of this sort of 1 February or end of January right through until December. It feels like a bit of an 11-month sprint for a lot of people. There's not many natural pauses throughout the year.
Sarah McCann-Bartlett, CEO of the Australian HR Institute, had this to say on summer shutdowns.
We did see post-COVID an increase in the summer shutdown periods, and that was really interesting. A lot of employers increased by a week or two the amount of time that they shut their businesses down over that holiday period. What we're seeing from our members this year is that some of them are increasing and others have decreased and gone back to the pre-COVID shutdown. So there's a bit of a mix this year. And those who've gone back to the pre-COVID shutdown it's in response to employees saying, look, can you give us our flexibility back, please? Mm. We want to choose when we take our leave. We're seeing some employers starting to incentivize employees to take their annual leave to reduce those balances. Those incentives include things like allowing a little bit of that to be cashed out over the holiday period, and that has a double benefit by bringing the annual leave balances down from an employer point of view, and that reduces some of their financial risk. But it also means that from a cost of living point of view, and particularly around this expensive time of year, it helps employees. They might also be incentivizing by not allowing the cash out, but perhaps giving gift cards or other incentives to employees who take certain amounts of accumulated leave. And again, that helps with the incentive through reducing cost of living pressures.
Ah, the gift card. Now, do you see our culture of accumulating leave, working through, not feeling like we can take leave as a problem, not only for workers, but also for organisations as well? Sarah?
Absolutely. The reason we have annual leave is because we all need a break. We need a break mentally, physically, and socially. And that's why annual leave is built into our employment patterns. So when you don't take leave, we are becoming more tired, more stressed, and particularly if one of the reasons we're not taking our annual leave is because we're worried about workload, that then has a bit of a cumulative effect. So the other thing is for employers, from a well-being point of view, of course, we now have requirements around psychosocial safety in the workplace. And one of those is to provide a workplace where the workload or roles where the workload is actually reasonable. And so employers do need to be looking at that workload issue, both from a legislative requirement, psychosocial safety, but also an employee well-being requirement as well. And of course, we all know that when our employees feeling well, both physically and mentally, and are well-rested, don't have excessive workloads, they perform, we all perform at our best.
So what else can we do to reduce leave balances? HR consultant Madeline Dow.
There's always work to be done in terms of really creating that culture. And I think that comes down to the behaviours and the modelling that you see around you. So the sort of middle management line managers really encouraging that and doing it themselves, because the reality is that junior team members will see their peers and their managers taking leave and see that it is an okay thing to do. And if anything, it's actually a good thing.
And Maddie, should organisations allow and even encourage staff to take longer leave during the year?
I mean, absolutely. I think that's an excellent idea. I know for legal reasons, a lot of people in financial services will have to take sort of 2 weeks of block leave where they can't access their emails. And actually, there's a lot of, from a HR perspective, wellbeing benefits to that as well. I know my partner's in that situation, and it's great because I get his undivided attention for 2 weeks of the year with no emails. He really isn't allowed to touch them. So I do think there is that, but obviously that is industry specific. But yeah, absolutely. I think anything that we can do to really encourage and model the need for switching off and taking healthy breaks throughout the year is wonderful.
And here's how to find an employer who's doing this well. Dr. Libby Sander.
I think if we look at things like the best employer rankings, that's something that is taken into consideration is well-being. Are people taking breaks? Do they have the ability to manage their personal life and their work life effectively? And you know, we're not burning people out and we don't have high turnover. So I think those rankings are usually a good indication of companies that are at least making an effort to get this right.
Are you ready for a holiday yet? Even in a cost of living crisis, when you don't feel particularly secure about your job, it is important to take a break. And if a big trip is out of the question, maybe a staycation could be good instead. Even a week doing something you love closer to home can be restorative. That's in fact what I'm doing this summer. Thanks to our guests, Dr. Libby Sander, Assistant Professor of Organisational Behaviour at Bond University, Sarah McCann-Bartlett, CEO of the Australian Human Resources Institute, and Madeline Dow, Consultant and Adjunct Professor at the Centre for Workplace Excellence at the University of South Australia. And thank you for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and mixed by Matthew Crawford on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Until next time, work on those holiday plans.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.